I look at reality. What do I observe? What is there in reality? And I base all the hypotheses on that. Health is a business. That means your aim is not to treat people, is to be profitable. So if something comes that is going to cure you, that is a huge threat to the system as it is right now.
So nice to be able to formally be sitting down with you today. You're with StemRegen, and you are so many things that it makes trying to figure out what questions to ask you challenging, because you are everything that makes entrepreneurship what it is, right? Like, you're a seeker, you're a scientist, you're an artist, you're a believer, you have guts and grit. And I thought, you know, we had a chance to speak yesterday, and, you know, first of all, let's talk about StemRegen, what it is, what you do, and why you do it, and who you do it for, right? Because it's a powerful, powerful story. And then we'll get into, you know, some of the more tactical things you've done. But I want to hear your narrative and your story.
So StemRegen is essentially a blend of plants, plant extracts that we have documented work in the body as stem cell mobilizers. So just like you have plants like echinacea that support the immune system, well, stem cell research has shown that we have a repair system, that's our stem cells, and there are plants that stimulate stem cells. So you take two capsules of StemRegen, and within about 2-3 hours, you will have 10 million additional stem cells in your blood circulation.
Stop right there. Why does that matter, right? Like, why do you need stem cells? What do they do?
Stem cells are your repair system. There's a direct link between how many stem cells you have in your blood and your body's ability to repair at any point in time in your life. So if you go back when you were 10 years old, there's none of the injuries that you've had when you were 10 years old that today you remember, because they heal super quick. Because as a child, you probably had 3, 4, 5, 10 times the number of stem cells that you have today. So the number of stem cells declined very rapidly in our lifetime. And by age 30, we've lost almost 90% of our stem cells. And from that point on, how many stem cells you have in your blood will determine how fast and how well you will not only repair, but how effectively you will maintain the health that you have today for the decades to come.
And it's a supplement, right? I know this because you gave me a bottle and I took some and I feel great. I feel smart, kind of sassy. But it hasn't always been easy for you as an entrepreneur, because while you've done the homework and you've written, and you're not like some con, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've done the work, you've done the research, you've written, you've been published, you've been interviewed, but you've still had to pivot, right, over the years. So let's talk about your journey as the leader of StemRegen and kind of the, you know, the ups and downs that you've had with this product that you believe in so deeply, you just will not take no for an answer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, for me, from my perspective, because obviously I don't have another perspective, from my perspective, it was just a quest. I'm working with a plant, the first one that we discovered had an effect on stem cells. I'm working with it, and I'm just trying to understand what it's doing in the body. There are things that we were not able to explain. How this plant could bring benefits to someone's heart, someone else's lungs, someone else's kidney, someone else's pancreas, someone else's brain, someone else's skin, joint. There's no plant that touched like all these aspects of human health. So we had no explanation until the very early days of stem cell research, when it was discovered that adult stem cells from the bone marrow were capable of becoming other cells than blood cells. Because in 2000, 2001, stem cells are only precursors to blood cells. So the discovery that they can become brain and heart and other tissues was, to me, like an amazing breakthrough in science. So when I came across that kind of information, very quickly I thought, what if stem cells are actually the repair system of the body? And what if that plant works by releasing stem cells? Just an idea. And we very quickly developed the assay, the lab, what we needed to do to show if that plant was indeed a stem cell releaser, and we discovered that it was. So the challenge actually came after that, because the moment that we discover that that's what it does, we show that that's what it does, then we faced dogmas. If you bring something, even scientifically, even with the data, but it's not what people have learned in college, then they will not immediately assume this is progress. They will assume this is wrong, because nobody taught me this on, you know, when I was in college, in med school. That was the first big obstacle.
Is that when you're talking about that first obstacle, is that the medical community or is that at a consumer level or is that like everyone?
I mean, it's everyone in the sense that the consumer are heavily influenced. I mean, more today with social media than back then, because all of this started around, let's say, 2000. So, but the medical community influenced the consumers. And if the medical community is not supporting a new concept, then consumers will not believe it either. But we did start that way. When we realized that the message would not pass through the medical community, would not pass through the scientific community, people will come and will say, you put more stem cells in circulation, so what? What does it mean?
Right.
And even showing them cases of people who have had amazing recovery, it's not a double-blind study. And that is another part that in my life, I think I found quite surprising to this day. You know, you could have a plant that have 1,000 years of use with a lot of history still used today in indigenous population because they use it today because it works. But if you don't have a double blind study and 20 people, they will deny 1,000 years of use. My brain cannot, I cannot wrap my brain around that.
No, it's too much. I can't either.
So for me, I look at reality. What do I observe? What is there in reality? And I base all the hypotheses on that. And then we go in the lab to test it and verify it. And that's what we did with this product. But once we verified it, it didn't change what other people thought about it. So the big wall was scientific community
right.
thinking it was not real. Even if you release stem cells, what does it mean? It means nothing. Maybe it's bad for you. In fact, that's the kind of things that we were facing early 2002, 2003. So we launched the product at first through a sort of relationship marketing. People try the product, they like it, they share it with people, and then that's how it grew. The first product grew that way.
And now, okay, so we talked about the scientific and medical community, which can be really for entrepreneurs impenetrable,
uh-huh.
right? Like it is a hard group to get into. And you talked about ways you're kind of working around, you know, kind of easing your way into like that barrier of a mm-hmm. medical industry. Talk a little bit about how you are bringing them with you.
Well, before I go there, there were two barriers at first. The first one seemed bigger, but it ended up being a much easier one to overcome. It was the legal one.
Right.
Everybody's lawyers basically were telling them, this product, by having an effect on stem cells, it means that it's disease. It will cure diseases. Therefore, the FDA will shut you down. And I was saying, no, this is your stem cells are your repair system. Just like you have an immune system, you have a repair system. And this product supports a normal function of the body, which is totally okay with the FDA. You can have a dietary supplement that supports a normal function of the body. We support the body's repair system. And it's clear we can do that. But at first, the question was there, and everybody's legal counsel told them, don't touch this technology.
Yeah.
So, but we overcome it because it was strong. We did it ourselves. Everything was fine. The medical community was more difficult, I would say, in like here in America, Canada, Europe. But as soon as you go in other countries like Mexico, South America, Southeast Asia, the response was much faster. And my assumption is that you go in countries where people don't necessarily have access to top medical system.
Right.
So they do everything that they can for their health. They have a problem, they will follow whatever will work for them. Doctors are also with these patients. They use with these patients whatever works. They are real physician, like really guiding their patients to help them. The moment they start to see that a product that supports stem cells is beneficial for their patients, they start using it. So we had a lot of medical support, a lot of doctors that we worked with in the Philippines, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Mexico, Ecuador. We have a lot of these collaboration. Almost never in America or in Europe.
Right.
It was way more difficult right. because the main thing was if I did not, and I'm not belittling it, I understand the strength of academia, but I think at the end of the day, it was, if this was true, why was I not told, you know, in med school?
Right.
Or why am I not told by the AMA or by, you know, the workshops that I do every year for, you know, for CME and, you know, continuing education credits? why am I learning this from a company selling a product? So immediately there's disbelief.
Right.
So our way to penetrate the medical community was to make a product like StemRegen, that has solid science behind this. We're doing studies to document its benefits for actual conditions like congestive heart failure, Parkinson, not to promote the product for those conditions, but basically to say your stem cells can have a huge impact on your health. Proof, look what it did with people with heart problems. Look what it did with people with Parkinson's. Like, let's put these aside. And they're just there to illustrate the strength of your own stem cells. So we're talking about just supports the body's natural ability to repair. And it's a message, when we dive into the science of it, that today is like it flows with everybody in regenerative medicine. So when we speak with regenerative medicine doctors, people interested into anything that is surgery, they know that stem cells play a real role in repair. So right now we're talking to the medical community. We have a lot of doctors using the product. And my aim is that as more and more of these doctors utilize the product, document the efficacy with their patients, the effect with their patients, then it will bring that as one alternative or one of the stem cell technologies.
Right. It just sort of opens up and increases the tools in your toolbox.
Correct. Exactly.
And I don't know how you feel about this, but, you know, I think, you know, to sort of illustrate why you believe in this so deeply, you know, give us a case study. Like, for example, the story you told last night, mm-hmm. about the girl, mm-hmm. who was drinking, right?
Yeah.
And okay, so like, let's make it real for people, like, mm-hmm. why you believe in this without, you know, ever floundering, right?
Yeah.
Like, tell us a story of the impact this can have on someone's life.
Well, first, the science is strong. Like, what gives me so much assurance whenever I talk about it, I could face anybody. There's so much science behind this.
Yeah.
But at the end, along with your question, well, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What do we have in terms of real life? And that is where I get some sort of confirmation of that belief through all the scientific literature. So one case that we talked about yesterday. So this is the daughter of a good friend of mine. She was drinking more than he knew. And one day he's called and she's at the hospital and she's in a situation of liver failure. So she has jaundice. And the doctors are basically saying, because she has not been sober for 6 months.
And she's young.
She's young.
Yeah.
She's young. She's probably, I would say, early 30s.
Yeah.
And she's probably 50% chance that she will live for the next 3 months. And she will not get a liver until 6 months from now. So where she will be in 6 months, when we can give her a liver, do a liver transplant, we don't know. So I just shipped her a lot of bottles. And about 6 weeks after taking the bottles, she sent me a thank you note in the video. And the before and after is out of this world.
I saw the pictures, yeah. And it was, you know, first of all, it's hard to watch someone suffering, uh-huh. like that. But then to see the aftermath, you know, like even people who are dubious or doubting, like when you see that kind of dramatic change, like it's, you know, it's a little jaw dropping, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, other, like we talked about this last night too. So, you know, you've got the scientific community, you know, you're trying to, you know, introduce this new way of thinking and this new way of seeing, you know, and approaching healthcare and, you know, stem cells. But then you've also got the added obstacle of the perception of stem cells,
mm-hmm.
right? It's political, it's religious, it's mm-hmm. ideological. And I just thought, you know, talk like the way you approach that, I think was really, really smart. And you like, talk us through that story.
I'll try to make it short. there's so many sides to that story, but trying to make it simple. Stem cells have never come from babies. We have never killed babies for stem cells. There's nothing wrong with stem cells. There have never been anything wrong with stem cells. If there is a conflict or an issue, is in 1996, John Paul II said, we should not use a life to help another life. And that is the statement that carried for years to basically demonize stem cells. But it was embryonic stem cells, because these stem cells, when you use a human life, is only embryonic. Adult stem cells have never been touched by this. But for a long time, the church and religious groups did not make the difference,
right.
between embryonic and adult stem cells. So there was this ethical issue covering stem cells that in reality has never been really there.
Right.
It was taken by political forces to really stimulate different political groups, and I won't go into the detail, but it was never what has been painted in the media in the early 2000s. It has never been a reality. It was just a masquerade.
How did you, as a founder, business owner, how did you combat that perception problem? I mean, that's like the core of the product. That is the product, right?
Explanation.
How did you?
It's honestly, in the early days, it was one at a time.
Right.
It's explaining in interviews and that's what it was. Where it really shifted is, and I was there at the Vatican at the time, is in 2011, the Pope Benedict's at the time did a conference where the Vatican says we are behind adult stem cell research. So they kind of changed they repaired the mistake that was done before. So now that opened the floodgates, if you want, for acceptation for adult stem cells. I think where the biggest problem comes from is that we live in a world where, and I'm not criticizing anybody here.
No,
health is a business. So if health is a business, that means your aim is not to treat people, is to be profitable. That's the aim of the health system in America, in Europe. That's what it is. So if as a business model, if you have diabetes and I sell you insulin every day for the rest of your life, it's an amazing business model.
Right.
So if something comes that is going to cure you, that can actually remove the problem, that is a huge threat to the system as it is right now.
Yeah.
And I think that is really the whole issue that we see, what has led to what we have seen in the media. All the messaging that has been there to kind of put a cloud over stem cells, put a spin on stem cells, making people feel that they are dangerous, that there's risk with these. Whereas you've been releasing your stem cells since you're born.
Yeah.
They are part of your everyday survival. They're there. Then the more we advance in science, the more we have to understand there is not exceptional. You would not be alive today without the work of your stem cells every day. They're everywhere.
Right.
So that's what we need to really slowly accept. But in the meantime, it's pictured as an exceptional treatment that is risky. You need to go outside in another country to get them.
Right.
Because here they're trying to suppress it. And it's all business and politics.
Otherwise, are you seeing that change? Is the perception of stem cells, as a therapy, is that becoming more accepted? Like, where are we in the cycle of this becoming, a mainstream solution?
I have seen a huge, huge shift in last year, 2023.
Yeah. Why?
It's hard for me to tell. I would say one of the things that I thought might have been a big factor was Tony Robbins' book about stem cells.
Yeah.
He talked about stem cells. It brought it to a lot of people's consciousness, if you want. But it cannot be just that, because it was too big of a change. I just think it's one of those ideas. I've been talking about it for 20 years. I'm not the only one. It's been out there, and suddenly it got more accepted. I think that now people believe in it. They understand it. It has been demystified. A lot of people travel out of the country to get stem cell treatments. I think the big obstacle right now is the cost.
Yeah.
The cost and availability.
It's expensive.
It's changing.
Yeah.
It's changing. It has a lot to do with the laws,
Yeah.
It has a lot to do with what has been done here in the United States with the FDA and how we're going to handle this whole issue of stem cells, because we're not, as far as I know, more fragile than people in Mexico. So if you can do effective injection in Mexico, right, why wouldn't they be effective here? So it's politics.
Yeah. Yeah. And red tape and bureaucracy. So you've been through this journey. I mean, you've been doing this since 2000.
The first observation was 2001.
That's what I was thinking. But as you've gone through all these different, phases and iterations of the product, as an entrepreneur and really just as a human, what mistakes have you made? Like, if you were speaking to, a young entrepreneur looking to take on, the big pharma companies, what mistakes have you made? Like, what would you do differently now?
I was a scientist. I think I'm born scientist.
Yeah.
Probably as a child.
Yeah.
My mind was working this way. So I'm a scientist. For me, the truth is what matters. So if you do something, you do study and you show, you give results and you explain it and it's all scientifically sound and solid, you've done 90% of the work. And it took me, I wouldn't say a lifetime, but a long time to realize you've done a very small part when you've done that.
Yeah.
The biggest part is to tell it to the world. And so the whole part that marketing plays in this took me a long time
right.
to realize that it's actually the biggest part of all.
Yeah.
And this is where we are right now. So we are really with STEM Regen in this phase of rapid expansion because we have now a solid marketing team, marketing system.
Yeah, I think that it, like the whole point, like you're a scientist. I mean, I heard you describing the way your brain works last night. Uh-huh. Like you know, some people see a line and you see like how you put everything together, right? The geometry of, mm-hmm. of problem solving. And then when you get to the stage where you are, like it's about telling people, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not going to know. Unless,
but I've told them forever.
Right, right. But in the marketing. So what you've done, which I just like, I was watching your TikToks last night and like, it's like, you know, the scientist person putting all the pieces together and then like the guy telling you to, you know, eat fennel seeds, you know, like talk to me about how, first of all, the TikTok channel has 500,000
yeah.
followers.
Yeah.
I mean, and you did it in 6 months.
Maybe 10.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's this crazy story. Uh-huh. So, you know, walk me through how that came to be and sort of how you choreograph this really rad TikTok channel for stem cell therapy and all kinds of actual advice.
Well, before starting in the whole field of stem cells, so my background is brain research. So I was working at the Montreal Neurological Institute, and along the path of doing my studies, I was always interested, since my teens, very interested in plants. So aromatherapy, essential oils, plants. So as I personally, I studied so much of that. And but I never, it was never a job. It was never what I did as a career. So when I was hired by this company that was selling blue-green algae to study how it was working, that's how we made our discoveries with stem cells. It was like right into an area of interest for me, which was the role of plants, you know, in health. So fast forward, I'm starting to put out there on TikTok videos. I've never done social media. It's
no,
not my
I know.
Thing.
It's crazy.
And somebody told me, if you do one, you do TikTok. Thank you. So I started TikTok. And but after a while, you know, there's so much you can say about stem cells. And there's almost like a resistance because it's almost like you're pushing that information
right.
to people. So at some point I just said, I mean, there's a lot more that we can talk about if the aim is really to just help people.
Yeah.
So people started to ask me questions. And every time I would get a question, because some people know that I know plants. And when I got a question, I just turned it into an answer on TikTok. And so it diversified into all these
crazy
all the things
questions,
that we can do.
Yeah. Crazy answers, lots of plant based things. First of all, it's very interesting information, but it's also entertaining. Like if this whole stem cell thing doesn't work out, I think you could influencer on TikTok okay. for sure. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, mm-hmm. but you know, failure is part of the deal. You know, whether mm-hmm. you're a scientist, an entrepreneur, humans, we fail. Mm-hmm. We're fallible. Talk to me about your story is one of just like falling down, getting up, dusting it off, getting farther. Like, talk to me about how you handle failure. Like, what do you even see it? Right? Like,
no, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, it's not even, I would say, it's not morally good. Like, I'm not special. I don't think it in my brain. There is that phase of failure. Failure is just like, oh, I missed the aim.
Right.
So I just need to do it differently. I need to readjust
yeah.
and what went wrong. And so I that phase of recognizing the failure as a failure, I don't really know if I have that. And you know, I'm born with a big flaw, which I think is not a flaw, but somewhere it is that I'm born with the thought that I can do anything.
Yeah.
If you just let me practice piano, I would be Mozart. You just want to let me handle a football, I would be, I mean, it's in my head. Of course, I would not be Mozart, but I thought that I could be.
Right.
So it's almost like anything I did, failure was just like, it did not register. Like, no, I can't fail. So
yeah.
we just need to do it differently. And I think it's been the it's kind of the leading, the
it's
driver
your attitude
for the rest
too.
Of-
you know, after our conversation, you know, you have this, first of all, last night you said, you know, just never take no for an answer, mm-hmm. right? Just don't. And you kept going, but you approach everything, even like just sitting here, like you have this optimism about you and this hope, right? Because you believe so deeply in the impact that you will and this product will have on the market. Like, are you born that way? Or like, how do you stay optimistic in the face of so many challenges?
Yeah, I guess I'm born that way. It goes with the failure. I think that it's just a matter of just thinking that there's a way forward and let's just find it. The one thing that I've learned, though, that has been, again, a lifelong learning, and I learned it late, so you could say I was slow, but I always thought that I could do everything on my own.
Yeah.
I was better if I do things on my own. And it led me to a lot of achievement in my younger years, but they were all lonely achievements, if
right.
you want. And I realized later on that actually alone, you cannot do a whole lot.
You can't do what you're trying to do alone. You need a team. You need a tribe.
So, and it's not an idea. I'm not saying like, okay, gee, I need to work more with people. It became like a real profound understanding.
Yeah.
This idea that you're strong alone was completely wrong.
Right.
It was a misunderstanding for a long time.
How did you break through to that? I think a lot of entrepreneurs are like, I will forge ahead and do. How did you, like, what did you do when it was like, you know, oh my God, like I need, what did you do? Did you start hiring people or?
Yes, but I think the realization came from the fact that there's a point where I just realized when you're responsible alone for everything, it's a lot of pressure. And when somebody shows up and takes a part of that pressure and carries it better than I would, then suddenly it's the observations. Okay, now I see maybe why it didn't work before. And then so I realized very quickly, I mean, the transition, it took me a long time to see it. But there's a point when I started to realize how you're so much stronger with a team than I started to, I mean, with my team, I give them everything.
Right.
Like, honestly, I truly believe that I'm almost nothing if they're not there.
Right. And how will you, like, as the company and the product starts to, you know, get broader acceptance and you're, you know, how will you approach expanding your team? Because it gets scary, right? Like when you're the core of the value and you're the passion behind the project and the product, it's hard to hand it over, right? Like to teams, and like, how will you grow that team? Because you're going to have to do that based on, you know.
I mean, we're doing it right now, but I will say, I hope my answer is not too philosophical, but I realized through the course of my life, however long it is, every big problem that I have to resolve were the things that few years before I really forced into being.
Right.
I did all I could to make them, to realize them. And by forcing and arm wrestling with the universe, you make things that don't belong
right,
to the universe.
Right.
And then they're the problem that I need to resolve later.
Right.
And then I realized that all the great things that have happened in my life, I actually never planned any one of them.
Yeah.
They happened unexpectedly, and I was just there to see them and grab them.
Right.
So I've more developed, as I move forward, the skill of not planning too much and be really there so that I can recognize the thing of value when they're there.
Right.
And then I take them when they show up.
Doesn't
planning, I think, just limits what we will be responsive to.
And don't you think when you do that, when you have the ability to like take a step, take a beat, that the, you know, you're allowing yourself to experience a deeper creativity.
Of course.
Right? Like when you're in it and you're like, you know, I mean, it's just nervous making. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it becomes you, right? Mm-hmm. You become it. But if you, and your creativity stops, right?
Like I think you cannot think straight.
No.
If you have fear in you.
Yeah.
And fear is unavoidable if you have a plan that is solid. And anytime you deviate from the plan, then there's the fear that your thing might not work.
Right.
And yet, deviating from your plan could be the thing that will make it
right.
work better.
Right.
So you just need to be there with it. So I think for me, over-planning creates this sort of fear environment that takes away the creativity, but also being there to really recognize the opportunities
right.
that life offers and to be there to see them.
Right. And if you're not there to see them, they're going to pass you by and land in somebody
Absolutely.
Else's lap.
There's not a door that closes without another one that opens.
Right.
And if you stay attached to the door that closes and you're sad and you're looking at it and you're crying on that door, you're missing all the ones that are opening in front of you.
It is philosophical, but that is like a, you know, when entrepreneurs, you know, when you have something, a business that you've created and, you know, it's failing, right? I've seen this a lot in businesses and that you just, you cannot accept that it's, you got to let it go, right? And people get into a state of ineffectiveness when you are holding on to something, you know, instead of like you've done it, like just dusting it off, getting on with it and, you know, doing something new and looking, you know, that attachment to the thing is, it's devastating.
It's the biggest obstacle that we create for ourselves.
Yep.
Because when something has failed, and that's another big piece that took some time to realize, but when something has failed, you look at the thing that has failed, but what has not failed is who you are now, having gone through that experience. What you have accumulated and what you can now carry forward is way bigger and stronger than what you have lost. So for me, I guess I don't see it as failure. So I just move forward with it.
It's a thing, though, you know, failure, and I think even more importantly, fear of failure.
Yeah, it's worse.
Right? Like that's the thing, you know. And if you have this fear of failure, you'll never start. Right? Mm-hmm. You'll never start something, you know, and there's a difference between fearlessness and recklessness, right? Like they're two different things. And I think entrepreneurs get them confused sometimes, but that fear of failure, like it is a soul crushing thing to witness, you know, another human so afraid of failure that they never even start something.
And it's a lot of failure.
It's a lot
of failure.
In business
is being afraid of doing the daring step, which oftentimes could be the decisive step.
Right, right. You can change your, you know, it's not even just a business lesson. It's a life lesson, you know. You just never know until you got to just start, man.
And I'm very, in almost everything I've done, I'm very conservative. You know, I'm not reckless. However, with what we've talked about before, like just saying, okay, I remove all the planning and I'm trying to just be there with it. The very daring step, if there's no feeling of like it flows, it really feels like it flows. I have no hesitation to doing some of the things that sometimes could be seen as like way more there. Yeah, very, very risky. I've done them. No, I mean, it's my way of functioning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have a different way of functioning. You spent time in an ashram. Mm-hmm. Like you have a very transcendental, a very Zen way of approaching business. And it seems like, I mean, I don't know you that well. But talk to me about how that experience of meditation, living in an ashram, like how that has shaped not only your business, but who you are in relationship to your business.
Well, if I answer that in a short way, I would say it's learning through meditation, through also living in the ashram, to realizing that there is reality with a big R, like the truth, the real life.
Right.
And there's how we see that life. Like the big example is I think it's coming from the Upanishad. You walk at dusk and then you see a snake on the path and you're afraid of the snake. And when the light comes up, you realize it was a rope.
Right.
But the mind made it into a snake. Yeah. We do this with everything. We see something and we make a story in our mind with it. And then we lived with the story. We interact with the story. And everybody on this planet can look at the same thing and we will all react to the story that we have in our mind. And that story is 99% of the time untrue.
Right.
It's false.
Right.
So I guess meditation has given me over the years this, it's not the ability, it's the conviction that if my brain gives me something that is associated with pressure, it's just another lie from the mind. I disregard it. And I try to put it aside and fall deeper into what is in front of me. And most of the time, what is in front of you is never a problem.
Right.
It's easy to resolve.
Right.
It just flows. So I guess that has affected a lot my way of doing business.
You're a philosophical guy, right? You've quoted, you know, some philosophical passages. You lived in an ashram. Who's your favorite philosopher?
Early on, Gandhi had a huge, huge influence on me. And then after that, I would say like deep Buddhist masters. What I like to inspire myself to read their life stories.
Speaking of inspiring, right? So we talked about this earlier, like the light that you have in you, and you're optimistic and you're positive, and you kind of light up the room when you walk in it. So what inspires you? What inspires that greatness to come out?
Okay, let me put it this way. You've got oneness at one end. The other extreme of oneness is complete division, believing that we are all separated beings. The more you dive in meditation, the more you shift toward oneness. And there's a point, I think you cross that line where you just realize that whatever I do, it has an impact on everybody. What they do, it has an impact on everybody else. If I'm fine and the other one is not fine, then we are not fine. So I guess it's just this sense here that we're really all in this together. And it's probably the driving factor.
As an inspired, enlightened, intellectual, and everybody has to have one of these, best album of all time.
I was a Yes fan. That's almost the only English music that I knew when I grew up. So I would say the album Relayer from Yes.
Excellent. What brings you the most joy in your life?
My wife.
I so softballed you. She's the best joy in my life too. In closing, you know, like there, we could sit here for days. We'd have to bring in a yurt or something and some beer. But, you know, like the advice, if you had one piece of advice that you could give entrepreneurs who are, you know, fearful or not just, you know, like hesitating with that first step or hesitating with failure, like what is the greatest advice you can give them through your eyes and your experience?
I would say, doing the first step will most likely be a mistake. Who cares?
Right.
Until you've done that mistake, you cannot now eliminate it as a mistaken path.
Right.
You just need to start and do it.
Just start.
Be careful, but start.
Right.
Because that start, that first step gives you more knowledge, more experience in the field that you, where you want to go. And it's just to be afraid of just starting. So just start. Do
yeah.
it. At whatever scale, you just do it.
Yeah.
So number one. Number two, I've probably been too conservative. Like me, a very silly example. I've done websites, I don't know how many times, cheap websites, you know, because I didn't want to spend, I don't know, 50 grand on a website. I've probably spent more than 50 grand on 8 different websites that never gave me what I wanted. I would have saved money if I had done the real good one from the start. So I would say you can't cheapen the value of quality work. So budget for having good, real partner that can do the good quality work from the start and be conservative, but just do it.
Right. Invest where you need to.
Invest where you need to. Otherwise, I mean, we hear those stories that of companies and products that are developed on a shoestring and they succeed, you know, on their own. It's they exist.
They do.
But it's probably not the person's first business.
It's very rare also, right? Like most, you know, 72% of startups fail, you know, so, you know, it's rare. And I think that that is so important, like invest in those things, those touch points you're going to have with your, your customers and your audience. So, do you have a third one? Or is it just
a third
the two?
One? I just say two, third one.
You don't yeah, have, it, I just, it, I didn't
but
want,
it's,
like.
It's the one I think that I just said before. I think you need to have a plan, but I think that rigidity to that plan is a big mistake that people do, because it takes you away from being there. Tons of opportunities can come and too many can come. And again, you run in all directions. So stopping the mind, sinking into what are the real opportunities in front and be open when they show up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Awesome. I wish you so much success, and I can't tell you how fascinating your story is and you are, and it's just been really a delight to get to know you. I mean that.